You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to a new episode of the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'll be joined today by frequent co-host Dennis Wissman. One thing I've noticed among my clients is that many come to me initially in search of a new purpose as they leave the world of full-time work. But many of them end up building a multi-purpose retirement comprised of a portfolio of interests and activities, some new and some things they always wanted to do, but never had the time to. I've learned a lot in the last 4 years of these conversations on our podcast. And one of the things is that my favorite guests are the ones who have written a great book, but they're also living what they wrote about. Andy Robin is the author of Tapas Life, A Rich and Rewarding Life After Your Long Career. Andy Robin was born in Chicago and raised in Mexico City. He holds a BA in computer science from the University of Texas at Austin and an MBA from Harvard University. He's been happily married to his wife, Carol, for 35 years, and they have two older children. Andy was an entrepreneur with his dad in the computer industry in the early 70s in Mexico City. His dad had moved the family there from Chicago to pursue an opportunity. Andy was in the semiconductor industry for 22 years, mostly in marketing, but also as a general manager, and most recently as VP of New Business Ventures. He was a house dad from 2002 until 2007, till Carol and Andy's youngest went off to college. Today, he retains the duties of shopping, cooking, household maintenance, travel planning, and finances. He also plays a lot of classical piano, some golf, and he's enjoyed 6 years on the board and executive committee of his large synagogue in California, where he was also co-chair of Raising an Endowment. He's been part-time CEO of a promising tech startup for 6 years and remains on the board. He's an executive coach and life coach, and he serves on the board of a foundation in Palo Alto and the New York City hedge fund. And he enjoys day trips, lectures, and concerts in and around the San Francisco Bay Area and Silicon Valley. Andy wrote Tapas Life to do some good for others. Andy, thanks so much for joining us.
Why, thank you for including me. I appreciate it, Joe.
So I really enjoyed your book, but I just have one question. How would you describe a tapas life, and how did you discover yours?
Okay, well, probably worth pointing out that tapas, for those who don't know, is one of the foods of Spain. It's also kind of like meses in the Middle East. It's the concept that instead of having an American-style large porterhouse steak on your plate with some potatoes and a veggie, instead you have a bunch of little dishes. And oftentimes the table orders 6 or 8 little dishes, and as you go, you order a few more, and so on. And so it's almost like a little buffet that you make yourself at your own table. And that's kind of how I think about the tapas life. During what I call my long career, decades of working in an office, that was my big job. And I probably did that 45 to 60 hours a week for decades. And between that and family, so if you'd like a big porterhouse steak and potatoes and a veggie, my plate was very full for decades. And now that I'm done with my long career, instead, I like to assemble a number of smaller activities that comprise my life of today. It's rich and rewarding. It's tasty and interesting. It's varied and enjoyable. And also, one of those tapas is meaningful. So I'm also doing some good for others on the planet. And I discovered it because, you know, we had a rather unconventional approach. Before my wife and I got married, we talked about what we wanted out of life. And we came to the surprising agreement that we both wanted our careers, which were going well. And we all both wanted to be at home caregivers to children. And so she quit her job because I was going to have a hard time breastfeeding. And later on, we went back and swapped. Meant to do that at about 6 and 8 or 7 and 9. But then she discovered a new career and got a master's and PhD in interpersonal kinds of stuff. And eventually we swapped when our kids were 13 and 15. And so I had 3 years with our oldest and 5 years with our youngest before they launched off to college and upon their own lives. And at that point, I started trying to figure out what the heck to do with myself. Yeah, I tried different things and I failed at some things miserably, and some things were okay and some things were pretty good. And it was about 4.5 years later that I finished assembling my tapas life. And I didn't know that's what it was until I ran into an old friend on the street, and he said, "Hey, Andy, you look great. What have you been up to?" And I just answered, "I'm living my tapas life." And that's when I knew that that's what it was. I wrote my book because it was challenging figuring out the life to assemble. And as I say, 4.5 years. So I thought I'd write a how-to step-by-step guide for others who might want to have an easier time of it.
Andy, how do you think the switch in roles, you know, middle part of your career when you switch roles with your wife, how do you think that influenced your thinking as to how it reflected today on what you do?
Well, during my long career, I always optimized on family. So, for example, in my last set of jobs, I was a VP of marketing-like functions for a big semiconductor company, and I was bored to tears with it. And I kept asking to be moved to finance or manufacturing, and I was happy to take a demotion. I just wanted to do something different and interesting again. And yeah, I kept told, "No, you're good at what you do. You need to keep doing what you're doing." And they kept giving me more money and perks and stuff. And so I kept doing what I was doing as a mercenary for my family until we got to the swap point. And so optimizing for family is really what the deal was about making that swap and about how I managed my career and my life. And, you know, it informed my tapas life by realizing that there are a lot of lives to be lived. And my wife and I chose a different one than almost anybody. And then I realized after our kids went to college that I could choose a different life than what most people I saw were doing.
Powerful lessons from great experience. Thanks for sharing that story.
Sure.
So, Andy, when you look around and see, what other examples can you share about other people's tapas that you've seen?
So I have some friends who have made grandchildren their tapas, and so they're constantly involved with their grown children and their grandchildren and going back and forth to where different ones live and getting apartments elsewhere so they could be near them. And that's the life that they have constructed. I've seen others who have done important things about social connection for tapas. One I write about in the book that I just loved is one couple I interviewed said that once a month they get together with another couple for a weekend. They alternate. Each month, it's one couple's responsibility to figure out within a 3-hour drive where to go, to book someplace to stay, to figure out where it'll be good to eat, to figure out what adventures to do while in that area. And then on Saturday morning, they go pick up the other couple. The other couple doesn't know where they're going or what they're doing. The couple in charge takes them there. They have a great weekend together. And after brunch on Sunday, they drive home. And I love that because it's a nice way to keep in close touch with another couple you like. It's a tapa. It's not a very frequent one, but it fits in the category of social connection, which is critical to remaining in good health and avoiding depression. And I thought it was super creative. Another fellow I know has a TAPA of flying airplanes, flying small craft airplanes. He and another friend went in on a, you know, very used small airplane and said, go flying every week. And he has expanded his by working on his instrument rating. I had a boss, my boss's boss, when I was in industry, who had been a Marine drill sergeant. This guy could be pretty refined or could be pretty gruff and controlled the dial on that pretty well. And after he left his long career, to my astonishment, he took up painting and he loved it. So yeah, people do different things. And of course, I've seen a lot of volunteerism amongst people, and that's a meaningful TAPA. That's doing something for others selflessly. And when you have a meaningful TAPA, then you're no longer just a consumer of resources and a hedonist. You're now a useful human doing something that benefits another. And without that, after a while, I learned life felt enjoyable, but a little bit hollow.
So what do you think these people tapped into? What part of their inner self did they tap into to help discover these things for themselves?
These different things? Well, in some cases, like the fellow who flies planes, it's something he always wanted to do, right? In my case, cooking is one of my tapas, and I discovered it because when we swapped and I became house dad, the family was pretty arch with my lousy cooking, so I had to get better at it in a hurry. And after 6 months, I remember a fine meal where one of the kids turned around and said, "Wow, Dad, this is really good." I felt like I had graduated from a B minus to maybe a B plus and have continued from there just because I like it. But people discover things because they're curious. There's something they've always wanted to do, or they see something that a friend is doing, or they see something that they read about, and they think, "I'll give that a try." And then they're off and running. And the only thing to avoid is the self-talk of, "Oh, that won't work. I won't be any good at it. I can't do that. That's really not possible. That doesn't fit in my life." All that self-talk needs to be put away in a drawer and slammed shut. And then at this stage of life, you get to just try it.
Great advice.
So, Andy, moving from a long career to this new life can be a challenging transition for many people. And I love the phrase you use in the book to describe the shock of someone looking at their calendar from the previous month to first month in new life and looking like a white rabbit in a snowstorm. great phrase.
I didn't.
People, in your experience, construct a new structure when they leave the world of full-time work into this type of life.
Yeah, that's one of the first chapters in my book. I didn't invent the phrase of white rabbit in a snowstorm, but I love it. You get that image of all the white snow coming down and the white snow on the ground and the white rabbit, and all you see is blank. And if that's what your calendar looks like, you rapidly become untethered and adrift. It's disorienting and it's depressing. And I've seen good close friends go into that mode, and it's really sad to see. I also have a fair number of coaching clients in their 30s who tell me that their father in particular is in that mode. That's a bad place to wind up. And so the antidote to that is some structure. If you think about building your life after your long career as building a house, the first thing you want to do is build a foundation and the framing for the house, before you can put in the plumbing and the electric and the drywall and the appliances and so on. And so this is the foundation and the framing for the house. And what it means is you need to put some regular things on your calendar. Some people like a lot of them. Some people don't like many. Some people like them to be very prescribed in terms of their day and time. Some like them to float. So, for instance, Maybe you wake up, you like to eat breakfast. Maybe you read some email. Maybe you catch up on the news. Maybe you do some morning exercise. Or maybe you do exercise a couple of times a week. Or maybe you go biking 3 times a week. Or maybe you go on a hike once a week. Or maybe you practice piano every afternoon or some afternoons. And you take the garbage out on Thursday evening. And you do the laundry on Saturday morning. And you water the orchids every other week. And you pay the bills once or twice a month. You balance your accounts once a month. You look over your finances twice a year. So there's a variety of things you can put on your calendar. You can decide to get your butt up out of the house and have a lunch schedule with friends a couple of times a week. That adds to structure and it serves for social construction. And if those people are interesting, then it may lead to activities together. And it may lead to inspiration for something you want to try yourself or do with a friend. And so getting some structure like that in place keeps you from feeling adrift. And the good thing is unlike during your long career, if there gets to be too much of it, you can take some things out. And if one day you decide, well, yeah, it's my regular exercise time, but yeah, I've got a great opportunity to go to lunch with Jane, and so I'm going to do that instead. And I'll exercise tomorrow instead. So it doesn't have to be super restrictive and rigorous, but it has to be enough so you don't feel adrift and untethered.
So putting the foundation in first is obviously crucial, but in listening to you and reading the book, it's not an instant thing. It starts with the foundation, but then after that, how should people approach the process of assembling a tapas life?
All right, well, I have a chapter called Catching Up, and it starts out with first things first. And so if you don't have a will and a durable power of attorney for health care, you just have to do that. If you have a fair amount of assets, then having a trust document and putting the right assets in the name of the trust is crucial. And here's the reason. In, you know, the matter of a will or a trust, if you suddenly get run over by a bus or have a heart attack or stroke and drop dead, if you have not done those things, you just create a mountain of work for your loved ones you left behind. And is that really what you want to do? Of course not. So you do a little bit of work and make sure you have a will and trust or just a will in place. The durable power of attorney for healthcare is because you don't want to have a stroke or be in a car accident or have some other health thing happen to you that has you partially incapacitated to where some doctor is looking at your loved one saying, well, what do you want to do? Or worse, do you want to pull the plug? And when you put the durable power of attorney in for healthcare in place, if you can spell out in great gory detail, if this sort of thing happens to me, I want you to do this. If this happens, I want you to do this. Then you avoid putting your closest loved ones on the spot. And so it's a great bit of homework to get out of the way. And so if you haven't done it, do it. And after that, you need to make sure you got a budget you can live with. And there's 8 bazillion books about that. And at the simplest level, that's create a spreadsheet and say, hey, here's all the money coming in or we expect to come in. And here's all the stuff we spend our money on. And if they don't balance, make them balance. And if you have money coming in from the sale of investments, then plan on lousy years because they happen. You may have noticed during COVID or during the 08 meltdown or during the 2000.com bust. And so plan for living through the lousy years. And then in the great years, then you can go on a fancy vacation or buy a fancy car or do, you know, put another room on the house or something like that. Give a fatty gift to your kids, but get a budget in place so that you can live by it, so that you don't wind up in your mid-80s out of cash and looking at your kids for help. And after that, then you catch up on other things. Maybe you've got a garage that's hasn't two-car garage that hasn't seen a car in decades. You can give all that stuff away to somebody who could actually use it and needs it and isn't as well off as you. And your load will be lightened. You can clean out closets. You can give away old clothes you haven't worn in forever. And you can do a house catch-up. Maybe your house was a family house, and now you want it to be a grown adult house. And you want to turn a bedroom into a study, or into a music room, or into a man cave, into something. Or maybe you want to redo the kitchen, or re-landscape. And so you can catch up on things. And that's one way to get started, and then gradually you launch into something that you love. For me, that was taking piano lessons. So I started in 04 at the age of 52. Now I'm pretty good at it. But do something you love and then build from there.
You mentioned at the beginning that not everything works, that you did some things that you failed at. How should people think of failing in this context, in this life, versus when you're immersed in a long career?
Well, if you think about it, during the long career, when you fail at your career, it usually has difficult consequences. You can find yourself in a dead-end job or demoted or moved somewhere you don't want to be or fired. And maybe you've got a mortgage, maybe you're saving for kids' education or paying for kids' education. Maybe you're trying to save for retirement. And all those things are very negatively impacted when you fail. After your long career, a revenue stream you can count on, maybe from distributions from IRAs, from Social Security, from other savings and investments, then when you try stuff and fail, there was no cost. So you can fail freely, as I talk about in the book. And then the only thing that happens when you fail is you say, wow, that didn't work out. And then you mine it for learning, Joe. That's when you say, oh, I wonder how come that didn't work out. I wonder what I didn't like about it. I wonder what capability I was lacking to do that sort of thing. You could even ask yourself, I wonder what had me try that in the first place. Did I think I should? Or did I really want to? And so each new thing you try, either it turns out to be great and you do more of it, or it turns out to be okay and maybe you do it sporadically, or it turns out that that wasn't a good tapa for you. You mine it for learning and you move on. So I give the example in the book of I thought I would go become a high school teacher in environmental studies, AP environmental studies, known affectionately as APES. And, you know, I went and did everything to apply for that job and to apply to get into college, get a teaching certificate. The last thing they required of me was to go sit in a classroom for 10 hours. When I did, I found out that the local high school was, of course, teachers were unionized. And so I would have to start at the bottom of the pyramid in a low-lane ninth grade biology class. And kids who were there didn't want to be there, weren't trying to learn, or being a mess in the classroom. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to do this for an indeterminate number of years before somebody above me makes space for me to move up the ziggurat. And that's when I quit that path. And I had done a mountain of work to be able to get into college to take a teaching certificate course of study. And boy, you should have seen me poring over a 2-inch thick Kaplan AP biology workbook for months, taking tests and everything else. And when I was done and had failed miserably, nobody said I was an idiot. Everybody was astonished at what I had done and what a cool thing was that it was that I tried. I learned a little bit about biology that I had long forgotten or never learned. And my biggest learning was, wow, if you're going to jump into something that big, do more homework up front, for goodness sakes. Minded for learning.
Great point. Great phrase. So some people retire solo, but many are retiring with a spouse or partner. How can people, in your experience, ensure that they're in sync with their spouse or their partner?
You know, of the many interviews I did, that seemed to be one of the most challenging topics. And so if you think about it, during your long career, you're working, maybe your spouse is working, or maybe is at home. You've been raising kids for 20 years, most likely, and now suddenly you're out of your long career. If your spouse was working, maybe they're out of their long career. And now you look across the table at each other, and it's kind of like, wow, we've been living that life for 20 or more years. Before that, we were living a young life. Now, who are you? Who have you become? What do we have in common? What do we actually like to do together? How do we actually want to spend our time individually and together? And the best way to approach that is to have some conversations about it. It's a time for a little bit of introspection. What do I really want for myself in these next two or three decades that I'm likely to still be around? Which, by the way, is new. Used to be you did your long career, you had a few golden years, and you were dead. Now you've got another two, three decades. And so do some introspection. Think about what you might want for yourself. And this isn't an instantaneous thing. This may take some months. Your spouse can do the same. And then have some conversations. I have a list of questions in the book that people can use as discussion topics. And I pointed to some other areas on the web where you can find a longer list of discussion topics. And you can gradually, in this process of discovery, build your new partnership. It's not trivial work. It needs energy. It can experience some conflict. It may show some disconnects, but with some luck and work, it can show some significant connects and joys and shared life that can last a long time and that can make for a happy later life. To quote Robert Browning's poem, you know, it's come grow old with me, the last of life. Come grow old with me, the best is yet to be, the last of life for which the first was made. And that's the object of those conversations.
You highlight the word conversation, and fundamental in throughout our lives with our significant others, partners, spouses, is communication. And I can't help but to think that you're basically recommending and seeing that good communication is so important, probably more important as we get older, but more important to even continue that as we continue further in life. So learning how to talk to each other and communicate with each other is such a valid point, and I appreciate you sharing that.
Spot on. Thank you.
So a number of things caught my attention in your book, and one of them is an interesting intergenerational topic that you bring up, the possibility of house swapping. And I was wondering if you could tell us about your idea.
Sure. You know, everybody has their own experiences and situations. It happens that we have a grown son who's married and now has a 7-month-old son of his own. It happens that a few years ago, when he was a fiancé to his now wife, they talked about how one day they would get married and one day they wanted to have a couple of kids, and they were lucky enough. And that one day, because they were renting, they wanted to buy a condo in a city to enjoy young married city life. And then one day, they wanted to have those kids and they wanted to move to the suburbs to raise kids in a more kid-friendly environment. And so my wife and I absorbed that thinking of theirs. And I don't know, one day a gumball dropped out of my head. And it was, well, we live in the suburbs. What if when they go house hunting for a condo, and I should note that we live within about 35 miles of each other. They're in a big city and we're in the suburbs of that city. They're in San Francisco, we're in Silicon Valley, where I enjoyed my long career. And I said, what if when you guys are looking to buy a condo, you buy a condo that all four of us. And then one day when you're ready, we'll move to the condo and you can move to our house. Because my wife and I are fundamentally big city people. And like they wanted to, we moved to the burbs to raise a family because that's a nice place to do it. And now after 37 years in the burbs, it was pretty enticing to get to move back to the big city. And we proposed that over dinner one night at our house in Silicon Valley. And we got a call about an hour later from our son saying, we talked about that a lot on our drive home, and we have some questions. And they asked their list of questions like, could we do some remodel on the house? And I was like, yeah, you can do whatever the hell you want to the house. And when we're dead, you'll inherit it. And, you know, so they went through their list of questions, and eventually I figured out how the finances would work, and eventually I hired a tax attorney to figure out how it would work from that standpoint. Turns out if you just swap the houses, you know, you live here, I live there, and the IRS catches you at it, they impute that you've each sold your house and everybody gets to pay their capital gains. And then the local government gets to mark your property up to market and charge you more taxes. So instead, you rent to each other at fair market value. And since it's in the family, they let you discount the rent by 10 or 15%. And then you do that. And so we did that. A few years later, in April of this year, the kids pulled the trigger. And one day we had two moving vans lined up and we did a big do-si-do here in the Bay Area. And it took us a couple of months to get settled in and for my wife to finally cajole me enough into hanging the big paintings, and now we're settled and we are absolutely loving city life. And we're kind of amused because they're super domestic suburbanites, barbecuing all the time and living in the backyard. And it's really fun to go visit them on Fridays and get to see our little grandson, and it's working out swimmingly. So could it work for everybody? I don't know. Probably not. Could it work for somebody? It's kind of interesting. Out here in California, where there's this thing called Prop 13, where when you sell your house, the price gets marked way up. Right now, we're taxed on a value that's way below the current market value. And so tens of thousands of dollars in property taxes are saved every year this way. And it makes living in a house in a good neighborhood with good public schools possible for our son and his family. And we wanted to do that for him. And of course, this then requires going back to our trust document and saying, okay, instead of the kids getting 50-50, Nick and his family get the house, and then that much assets goes to our daughter. And then if anything is left, it's 50-50. And so it has some moving parts, but we've done it. We're all really happy about it, and it's a possibility. It's yet another example of, for goodness sakes, live your life your way, not the way that the American marketing culture wants you to.
Well said. And I know you've got a lot going on and a lot of diversity in your own tapas life, but I have to wonder, what are some tapas that you've got your eye on for the future?
Well, I have two. One has been pretty hard to get done. The other thing I think is coming along. One aspect of my meaningful tapa is that I accepted a position on the board of a local nonprofit in Silicon Valley. This is a nonprofit that was endowed by the estate of a person who owned a small shopping center. And when the last of his progeny passed away, it became an endowed foundation. And it gives away some millions of dollars every year to local charities, mostly hunger and homelessness, but a few other things in addition, some things for seniors, etc. So it's a nice do-gooder thing. It's not giving to places like United Way or Red Cross. It's giving to little local organizations, food pantries and stuff like that, where you can see the good that you're doing. And currently, the board chair has a few years on him. He recently asked me if I would be willing to learn more about what he's up to, more about the workings of what he does as board chair. And so I suspect that that may be something that I may be doing in the longer term. And that would be nice. I would be happy to be doing that for decades because it's a nice do-gooder thing. Another future TAPA that I've been trying to get to do, but I've keep running into brick walls, so I keep trying to see if I can't get around the wall or dig under it or climb over it somehow. And that's that one of my TAPAs in life is life coaching and a little bit of executive coaching, but usually life coaching. I limit that practice to 5 clients because it's a TAPA, not a career. I love that because it's super meaningful getting in close with another human in a way that's helpful to them. And I really like to do that for people in the leadership of environmental organizations because I like the environment, as you may have detected earlier. I think it's an important thing for all of us if we want our grandchildren to have a livable life. And I'd like to apply my coaching there to have the leverage of benefiting those organizations. And so far, I mean, the organizations that have the most clout there are organizations of attorneys. And their approach has been, well, we don't need no stinking coaches. So I'm still trying. Another one that's one I come back to is my wife and I have a couple of times gone to Paris for a month, rented an apartment, and just explored. And we love it there. And I'm self-taught in French, and with COVID flailing, but hopefully winding down either in 22 or 23, I'd like to go do that again. We'd like to go do that again. And so I've just restarted French lessons on the web. This time, a little bit deeper lesson, and I'm hoping to get a little better at it. And I'm hoping to find a French conversation group here in San Francisco that I can join and maybe watch French movies together and have discussion, or read French books together and have discussion. So I'm hoping to get a little bit more into French over the next year or two to be a little geared up for our next trip to France.
I love the way you keep adding to your tapas plate and trying different parts of the menu.
Got to keep it tasty.
You do. Variety, right? Well done. Well said. A lot of good ideas for people. That's great.
Yeah.
So, Andy, one last question, if we could. If you had only 5 words to describe the benefits of a tapas life, which 5 words would you choose?
Varied, engaging, enriching, full, meaningful.
Great list. Andy Robin, thanks so much for joining us, giving us and many others a lot to think about, and really appreciate you taking the time.
Delighted, Joe. Thanks for including me.
Thank you, Andy. Have a great day.
We appreciate Andy Robin spending time with us today. And Dennis, what jumped out at you as your key takeaways?
Well, first of all, I love the phrase, the tapas life. I mean, when we really think about it, it's a bunch of little dishes, savory dishes that we can enjoy. And I love the analogy to our own lives. I'll point out a couple of things, and there were many good little morsels in here, so to speak, no pun intended. But when he talked about how he discovered his own tapas life, he talked about his long career, which, you know, really a lot of people can resonate with. And he talked about some of the role switches he did between him and his wife. And I couldn't help but to think that those things actually led him to these life experiences, past life experiences he had, really led to him discovering what he really wanted to do and how he wanted to live his life. And I noticed when he spoke to us, he said that optimizing his family relationship was critical and it was at the fundamental part of it. And, you know, that seemed to be his anchor and really started to be the place where he made decisions from, be the cornerstone, so to speak, in the foundation. But I thought the key here to me was sometimes, you know, and a lot of times the past is the key to your future. So that was one thing. The second thing, and I encourage our listeners on this one to perhaps listen to the section again when you asked him, Joe, about how can people construct a new structure when they leave the world of full-time work? He did a very good job speaking about some of the challenges with that, but he also, in my mind, simplified it in that you need to create a framework for yourself and put regular things on your calendar. But then when he started giving examples of those regular things, they became normal things that you would perhaps do. But did you ever think about scheduling them or making a structure for yourself that you followed and then adding to the structure? And I found it that having structure and having something in place can help, as he said, I like the words, it beats being adrift. And I know, and I speak for myself, but years ago, when we had started the podcast and everything, one of the things I know came up right away was the importance of structure. Myself was something I admitted I struggled with. And it's been a journey, but I find what Andy talked about is very practical. I find it as good advice. So listen to that part again, because creating that structure could give you the springboard to move on to the create your own tapas life. And then the other thing I would point out is when we talked about the being in sync with your spouse or partner and how important communication is. And starting that communication and having those conversations is an early on in planning for your retirement, probably even way before that. But having a good communication style or a good communication process with your spouse is probably a really good thing to do because it will serve you well as you get older in your life, especially when you retire. And it will help you change and adapt because retirement is a journey and one continues to adapt and change. So as they should with a good tapas menu. So Joe, what about yourself?
So picking up on the spousal communications for those who have spouses or partners as part of this, some of the things that I do with Design Your Life include coaching couples who go through the Design Your Life process together. And what I've learned from that is they benefit by having a set of tools and also because it changes the pattern. If you have a conversation about your mutual, individual, and collective futures, and you're doing it in the same way with the same patterns and dynamics as if you're talking about where to go to dinner this Saturday night, it's not going to be as good. So having a structure, having some tools, and having an open mind coming in and really listening, I think really makes a big difference in helping people get in sync. The other thing I'd recommend is his point about meaningful tapas. So some of the things he talked about were fun, interests, personal, but it's also the meaningful tapas that he's involved in. So give those some thought. And then also the time horizon, because sometimes people think this is a prefab thing, designing your life in retirement, building a tapas life. He talked about it as assembling. You can build it over time, starting with a strong foundation, but give yourself time to build it correctly. And then last point is just really on mindset. Look at failure differently. Said in the workplace, it's going to have consequences when you fail. The best workplaces give people space to experiment and fail, but many don't. But in this space, it's up to you. And I loved his phrase, mine it for learning. So great takeaways, great conversation. Appreciate everyone listening to Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Our mission is to help you retire smarter by planning for the non-financial side of life in retirement.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.